House Judiciary Committee, January 31st, 1:30 p.m., Room 354, Subcommittee B.
Committee will come to order. Clerk will note those members present. The first bill on our agenda today is 2113. However, I'm informed that the Department of Justice will be sending someone over to testify on that. If there aren't any objections from the committee, I would like to take the other bills out of order. Is there anyone in the audience that is here to testify on 2113?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Ron Hicks, State Court Administrator.
Okay. Would you like to step forward then, and we will take 2113 in its normal order?
Exactly when doesn't make too much difference.
Well,
my statement's brief, so.
Fine.
I'm Lauren Hicks, the State Court Administrator, appearing at the request of the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals concerning House Bill 2113, merely to state to the committee that the court, the appellate courts, particularly the Supreme Court, does not support the bill. The judges have discussed it in conference, and in their opinion, it's, it would be better to leave the law as it is and not give them this discretion. The Supreme Court, and also Judge Schwab, the Court of Appeals, but mainly the Supreme Court. This bill would give the Supreme Court discretion to assign Guaranto and habeas corpus
mandamus
to the Court of Appeals. The Oregon Constitution now gives these three matters to the Supreme Court as a discretionary matter. A person can bring an original case before the Oregon Supreme Court on these three writs. They can also be heard in the circuit court, but a person who wants to bring them to the Supreme Court and can show a reason why he's brought them to the Supreme Court rather than the trial court, they do so. This bill would allow the Supreme Court to assign this jurisdiction to the Court of Appeals.
And does the department still want it?
As far as I know, they do. I'm not really sure about that. But the court did, when they heard about the bill, discussed it in conference and merely sent word to me to appear and say the court does not support the bill.
Representative Blumenauer,
could you possibly ask why?
Well, I don't know why. I mean, they didn't express the why. My own feeling is that probably, and the Chief Justice and I discussed it very briefly, that the Constitution puts this authority in the Supreme Court, and in a way, if you change it by statute, you're going around the Constitution. That may have been the feeling. I think also it's not a particular burden to their caseload. We have quite a few mandamus cases, but very few of the other habeas corpus or Guaranto. And I think probably if the bill were passed, the court would not exercise the discretion and would not assign this jurisdiction to the Court of Appeals, because at least the present makeup of the court feels that it's more appropriate to leave the law as it is.
Representative Blumenauer?
I would at least like to have, rather than what might have been your recollection of a brief conversation with the Chief Justice, I'd like to have in writing, if they're serious about being opposed to the bill, for their opposition. I don't think it helps us very much to have somebody come and say they're against it.
Was there no conversation between you and the department? I mean, being the administrator?
Not me personally, no.
I'm wondering what their motive was, Mr. Chairman.
As I understand it, Representative Degas, they will have a representative here shortly to testify on the bill.
I don't know. Don't know who suggested the bill or had any background about it at all. And in fact, the first time I saw it, I had never even heard of the bill before. I don't know if I called the attention of the Chief Justice. I don't recall now if he had known of it prior to that or not. It seems to me that he didn't. And I think he discussed it, or two or three of the judges discussed it with Judge Schwab and decided they ought to put it on the Supreme Court agenda, which is a regular conference they have every Tuesday to discuss cases. And after the conference, they sent a note to me to say that please let the legislature know we do not support this bill. Then I asked the Chief Justice about, is there any reason or explanation, or do you want to go over, or do you think maybe you should go over rather than me? He said, well, I think better that you appear on this and just tell them that we don't support it. I think what he really means is, we're not opposed to it, we're not going to get them campaign against it, but if we were asked whether we think it's a good bill or not, we'd say no.
Well, as I read the bill, it allows you to exercise discretion if, in fact, you want to. So if the bill passed, you would not have to give
no.
the Court of Appeals any jurisdiction.
No.
Might there be some cases in which it would be advantageous to the Supreme Court to exercise that discretion?
I don't know of any. Maybe the Department of Justice can bring an example. I can't think of any, and the Chief Justice didn't mention any.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Lombard.
It's not clear in my mind, and I'm just wondering, Lauren, in yours, is this just applied to the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court or also the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court in hearing these matters on appeal?
Oh,
particularly the habeas corpus proceedings that come up.
Oh, no, I'm sure it means the original. I forgot the wording of it right now, but...
Well, in the title, it says that, Mr. Lombard. Permit the Supreme Court to decide original jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It does on the front page.
It doesn't say that in the bill, though.
Oh, that's
and it,
well,
and it makes the bill part of Chapter 2, which is very broad, very general, and I just... I'm not sure that
well, I would certainly, that's what I've been interpreting to mean, that they're only talking about the writ's original jurisdiction.
Original jurisdiction.
And my guess is that there's some reason in the Department of Justice's practice in mandamus, which is the only thing we have more than one every 2 years in, that perhaps they feel that this could be expedited if it went through the Court of Appeals. But from what I understand, Judge Schwab said he wasn't seeking the jurisdiction, and they feel they have enough. And the Supreme Court just felt that there's no problem with the way it's being handled now, and they prefer to see it stay that way.
Mr. Hicks, would it be
probably after the Department of Justice testifies, you can know more about the bill than I know now, but I'm sure.
Would it be possible to get a written statement from the judges regarding the reasons?
Well,
as to their opposition to the bill?
I'll tell them that you prefer that.
We would respectfully request that if we
okay.
could.
If it is possible to get a statement, would it be possible to get it by the end of tomorrow?
I think so. Yes.
Because then that will allow us to put it on our work session agenda.
Well, I'm sure the Chief Justice would have come over personally if he thought that you really wanted to see him. And
the end of tomorrow would be helpful.
Well, tomorrow is their conference day, so the whole court could consider your request tomorrow morning. They're usually through conference by noon or 2 o'clock. I'll see that something is over from us before then.
Representative Rutherford.
Yes, Mr. Hicks, you indicated in your opening remarks that there was some constitutional impact. Can you explain that more fully?
Well, the jurisdiction is given to the Supreme Court in the Constitution. It gives the Supreme Court jurisdiction in all appeals and in original jurisdiction at its discretion in these three areas.
What I'm looking at is a section on jurisdiction in the Constitution, which covers the revision of final decisions of the Circuit Court.
Well, I think that's where it is. I didn't look it up.
If there is a constitutional question, we should know about it, but I haven't found it yet, and that's what's puzzling. It couldn't be the first time I couldn't find the law.
Well, maybe my memory's wrong on that, but I think it's right. I can look at it here maybe after I'm through testifying.
Right.
Let me use that volume and see if it's there. I was thinking it was constitutional. As I say, that's my assumption. It's not one. That may be one of their reasons, but I don't know.
Further questions?
Maybe I shouldn't even mention it because I'm guessing that's their reason. It was one of the things that struck me personally. It might be a reason why I would not favor the bill if I was had a vote on it, which I don't.
Further questions from
maybe,
the committee?
maybe your testifiers here now.
Thank you, Mr. Hicks.
Thank you.
Is there a representative from the Department of Justice to testify on House Bill 2113?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
For the record, I'm Michael Gillette from the Attorney General's Office. I didn't have the opportunity to hear what Judge Hicks had to say with respect to the bill, but if his suggestion was that the Supreme Court didn't want it, then that's fine with me. This measure was originally prepared as a proposal at the request of a couple of members of the Supreme Court to see what it would look like. The concern arose because there are kinds of cases in which the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction because the writs involved, quo warranto, mandamus, and habeas corpus, are constitutional writs, and so the jurisdiction has to lie in the court which is constitutional, which is the Supreme Court. However, their subject matter is criminal law, in which the Supreme Court serves as a court of discretionary review and not as a court of review of right. So the result was they ended up hearing writ cases directly, when if the matter had been brought on as appeal, they would not have heard it directly. And so they were deciding minor case questions rather than law deciding questions. So the result was that this bill was drawn to give them the opportunity to decide whether or not they wanted to hear a particular writ case, and if they didn't, to simply assign it to the Court of Appeals so the Court of Appeals could decide it as on a purely case-by-case basis. It was designed to give them the authority to assign to a statutory court something that the court otherwise couldn't hear. So it's just a question of convenience. The Supreme Court would still retain original jurisdiction, but could pass the case along if it chose to. The result, I think, would be that 9 times out of 10, they would not entertain the writ proceeding, but would forward it to the Court of Appeals instead, because most writ cases don't involve major issues of law. They simply involve little tiny things. And particularly in habeas corpus, the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, for that matter, are not really very good places to argue writ cases anyway, because they're not an evidence-taking court. And writ proceedings in either one are awkward, but it seemed to us to be at least useful for the Supreme Court to be able to get rid of that stuff, unless it looked as if it was going to settle some major issue of constitutional importance. So that's why the bill was prepared. I didn't have a chance to hear what Judge Hicks said, so I don't know whether he's pro or con.
Well, apparently there's the Supreme Court is taking the posture that they didn't really request this, and they gave us basically the position that you'd have us some more, that you could tell us some more about the bill and perhaps some of the reasons behind it. Now you're telling us that it was done at the request of some of the Supreme Court justices.
No, a couple of them wanted to see what it would look like. What had happened was, we pointed out on occasion, in cases we've argued before the Supreme Court, both when we brought the writ, when we thought a circuit judge was doing something wrong, and when somebody else brought the writ and we were defending the circuit judge, we pointed out that this is the one way that what amounts to an original appeal in a criminal case ends up in the Supreme Court without having gone through the Court of Appeals. It was kind of a dumb way to run a railroad, because they normally only handle those matters as a matter of discretion. And so it seemed appropriate to at least take a look at the question. Now, after they looked at it, they decided they didn't want to sponsor the bill. So it came in as Department of Justice bill instead, to simply give you a chance to assess the question. It seems to me that when you're in a situation, well, let me give you a couple of examples very quickly. Let's assume that an individual is in custody on a governor's warrant, and he's about to be extradited to California, and he brings an original petition for a writ of habeas corpus in the Oregon Supreme Court, and the question is the validity of the papers by which he is to be transferred to California. That is not only a matter of no significant constitutional moment, it's a tremendous bore, and it takes about 2 seconds to figure out whether he goes or not. The papers are either adequate or they are not. Classic example, something the Supreme Court shouldn't fiddle with. And they would, I think, routinely, in cases of that kind, transfer them to the Court of Appeals, the court which always deals with appeals from those kinds of cases, if they simply had the jurisdiction to do it. There'd be no reason for them to take those cases. But they can't, so they don't. They end up hearing them.
As a practical matter, aren't most writs of this nature filed in circuit court for the very reason that you put forth, that there is at least some small need for evidence-taking?
Yes, although that's a classic example where there's no point in taking any evidence, because the only question is the adequacy of a document, normally. Yeah, they usually are filed in circuit court, and they ought to be, but keep in mind that since the Supreme Court is the court the Constitutional Court, it has jurisdiction. If somebody wants to file a writ, it has that jurisdiction, and it's sort of stuck with exercising it to a limited degree. I'm about to abuse their jurisdiction this afternoon by asking them to take their writ that the state's asking for. And again, they're stuck with it. It's a matter of the Court of Appeals how to rule on, because it's it's not a question of it's not a major question of law. It's a little tiny question the Court of Appeals has already ruled on. So there's law on it. The Court of Appeals ought to hear it, but I've got to ask the Supreme Court to hear it.
Further questions from the committee? Bonka?
I wonder if you couldn't get together with the members of the court and Mr. Hicks and try to work something out and come back to us.
I'm not sure the court feels it appropriate to speak very much to its own jurisdiction, except if somebody comes wandering in is trying to do something that's patently unconstitutional.
We were told that if this bill passed, the Supreme Court would not exercise the authority the bill grants. So it's in its appointment.
Well, if that's true, then I think you ought to table a bill.
If the court's really already decided that, then I think the bill ought to be tabled.
Because I don't want to fight with them about it. If they've really decided that they want to continue to exercise their jurisdiction that way, my guess is that that's not their view, based upon my conversations with them the last week, talking about a whole raft of things.
That's what I mean. This needs to be clarified.
Okay. Why don't we talk about it, and I'll report back, or Judge Hicks can.
Hopefully by tomorrow afternoon.
Well, we can probably report back with that.
We can figure that out quickly enough, I think.
Any further questions from the committee? Thank you. Is there anyone else to testify on House Bill 2113? Okay, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, House Bill 2269. And Mr. Pendergrass, will you be your first up?
I'm Walter Pendergrass, a practicing attorney in Portland, Oregon. Who was asked by Alan Jensen, who was on the committee which was involved with this bill, if, since I was going to be down here anyway, I would say, more or less, quote, that from the committee's point of reference, this is principally a housekeeping bill. The fees that are involved are permitted to be granted by the trial court, in effect, but it was overlooked to include that entitlement also in the Supreme Court, and that appears to be what the bill is doing.
So in essence, this would take care of a situation where the trial court had either failed to or neglected to determine attorney's fees?
No, I think probably, yes, it would do that, but I think it would take effect in the situation where the trial court said no to the taxpayer and the Supreme Court said yes.
Mr. Bromka, excuse me, I didn't see
you. Well, as I understand the situation right now, is that if you get an adverse decision at the trial court level, and you appeal it to the tax court, you prevail in the tax court, under here you are entitled to attorney's fees, or the tax court is entitled to award you attorney's fees. But then if you thereafter appeal the tax court decision at the Supreme Court, it was left out.
It was just left
and
out.
And so simply answer. It just allows for the attorney's fees Supreme Court level, as well as at the tax court level.
That's my understanding.
Do you have any idea how many cases are appealed annually from the tax court to the Supreme Court on inheritance tax matters?
I have not the foggiest. None. Ellis Sanders is here, and he may have one.
I'm just wondering what we're talking about potentially, for instance, in the area of.
Come on up to the microphone and just state.
What we may be talking about, if we can put this in terms of a physical impact.
Okay, I'm Ellis Sanders, the Department of Revenue. Of course, we haven't had the experience of paying a fee at the Supreme Court level before. Now, on the assumption that we may have one of these situations a year, that fee could be as high as $20,000, depending on the amount of work that went into that particular case. It was a large, a large estate with large work involved in that case. It could be as high as $20,000 a year. That's based on one case. That's about all I can tell you, because we really have had no experience with it.
Do Do you feel that this would have the tendency to increase the number of appeals from the tax court to the Supreme Court?
Well, from my experience with taxes, I think whenever a fee is paid for the taxpayer at either the tax court level or above, I think that may be an incentive for an appeal. The lawyer representing the taxpayer may consider in his recommendation to his client that if we win at a higher level, we may get the fees paid for you. I think that's probably a consideration in deciding whether or not to appeal.
And you would, it's your best estimate at this point, there'd only be one case per year?
I would think there would probably be no more than one case per year, because first off, there aren't very many inheritance tax cases that go to the Supreme Court, and we're not going to lose very many at the Supreme Court, I don't think, either. And that's why I'm saying maybe one case a year, maybe a high of 20,000.
Mr. Bromka?
You're paying fees now on cases that you lose at the tax court level?
Yes.
Do you have any, how large are those fees?
I may want to turn to Mr. Apley. He's one of our attorneys in the Department of Justice.
I'm Walt Apley, Department of Justice, and this problem of guesstimating is certainly a problem. I know at present I have an appeal to the Supreme Court, or potentially, it's a class action. We prevailed in the lower court, but that, of course, doesn't necessarily mean we're going to prevail in the Supreme Court. I could guess there that the fee could be $50,000 in that particular. But that's the best we can do is guess. My understanding of this bill primarily is that there are provisions adequate for the tax court, but there are absolutely no provisions for the Supreme Court. And I assume that was the only purpose of this bill, was to provide the payment of fees in the Supreme Court.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Buttons.
Do you anticipate that, I realize this has to be an estimate, but you can only guess how many you're going to lose, really, that's good enough. And what size case. So you got two variables. But do other states do this type of thing?
I wouldn't say that the rule is that the state in all cases allows it.
Do any of you know?
I would be
you
glad.
Know any state?
I don't know. I haven't researched it.
We'll research
it. I have
report.
No idea. My feeling about it is that since the legislature said, look, philosophically, this is a good idea, I don't see much point in not saying, look, let's do what we really thought we were doing the first time and say it's a good idea and extend it to the Supreme Court. I think the philosophy has already been adopted, basically.
At the tax court level.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where most of it is. And yeah. My feeling is it just got overlooked from looking at it.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee?
I think Representative Rutherford would back me up on this. Certainly in reading the Oregon reports, the number of cases that we read out of the Supreme Court level on inheritance tax is minimal. Just seldom see them. And then most of them aren't refund and overpayment type of cases. So, I certainly would have to agree with witnesses that very probably in terms of impact is probably would not be very substantial.
Further questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anyone else that's here to testify on House Bill 2269? Next item on the agenda is House Bill 2265. Mr. Pendergrass.
I'm here in this of this bill in a little different posture. I was chairman of the probate committee. I am not now. I have been and still am the liaison between the probate practitioners and the judicial council of probate judges. I was asked by both the bar and by Judge Rossman, Circuit Judge of Yamhill County, who is chairman of that council, if I would come to this meeting at this time. This matter came before the council 3 years ago, sort of as a byproduct of other conversation. The concern that was expressed by Judge Rossman and the concern that was expressed and by the rest of the, I think, majority, certainly a majority, I think everybody who was at that council, was that there were two, what they felt, pretty good reasons why the probate jurisdiction should be in one spot, which would be the circuit court. One of them is administrative. It just makes administrative sense to put the probate problems, which certainly are not getting less complex. They are getting more complex, particularly in the tax area. They aren't in the probate part. That is considerably less difficult and time-consuming than it was before the enactment of the revised law. But the tax problems are getting to be a considerable pain. And the relationships with lawyer problems in one spot. A district judge is a lawyer. It is not always true that a county judge is a lawyer. I don't know whether all of them are. They don't have to be. And the feeling was to put all of this in one administrative pot made a lot more sense than the way it now is. It is the recommendation of the probate committee this time, the one of which I am not now a member, having been retired off it, that this legislation passed.
Questions from the committee?
Are these the only counties in which probate jurisdiction is still vested in the county court?
I assume that to be true, but I haven't gone back and looked at it.
Why?
Excuse me,
I didn't know that. Were you through? I just wonder why these counties were accepted in the first instance. Sparseness of population?
I think that's part of the reason, and part of the reason is that the jurisdiction has been there, and I think there's a certain reluctance to let go of that which one has.
Yeah, but it has been there in all the other
that's
counties,
right.
Too, originally.
Well, that's an awful long time ago originally, but I think you're right.
Yeah, but just a function of time.
There's one objection that I have heard, I haven't found it, is that you have to drive 300 miles to file an inventory or something like that. You don't, really, and not in my judgment anyway. I will sometimes mail things to the Multnomah County Courthouse, which is a block and a half away. Not very often, but if the gal has gone and our messenger girl has completed her run and something has to get out, I might just as well throw it in the mail. It'll be there tomorrow morning. And typically the same thing is done over the rest of the state. The times we have to go are the times when there is something that is contested or something where the court wants to have some head-to-head conversation about a problem. But that is not most of the time, at least in my experience.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Penny.
Thanks.
Andrew Leckie?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Andrew Leckie, the Wheeler County Judge. I'd like to emphasize exactly what you said, Representative. And that's scarcity of population, sparsely populated. We have 1,709 square miles of land and 2,000 people living on it. These people elect their county judge to serve these various functions. Now, when those people come to me and say, we don't want you to have that power, we want to turn the circuit court, fine. I think that's all right. Actually, these counties that are referred to in this bill are working under the county court system. They are, I suppose you could say, anachronisms, but they are proudly anachronisms. In our counties, we know most of the people there. This is why we fight so hard to save juvenile authority for county courts where it still exists. We know these kids. We know these people involved in probate. I think one concern has been that I've heard expressed that number of cases pending over 3 years We have none. I had one a couple years ago, and I simply got the two remaining brothers together and said, get those cattle in and get them split up the way you're supposed to, and let's get this thing settled. Now, I know where to go to their house to tell them to do this. The circuit judge does not. The circuit judge is 150 miles away in John Day. I'm quite sure that if I were to talk to Bob Campbell, our circuit judge, he would want this authority to stay exactly where it is. Knowing, of course, that circuit court's always there if they differ with my judgments on this matter, right? There, it's always available to them. Another thing I don't care about in this bill is that to a degree it interferes with the juvenile authority in adoptions and guardianships and this sort of thing. And this could get sticky in some cases. It would add, I feel, to our circuit court costs, which are already skyrocketing, as you know. You people are working on bills now to give some relief in the circuit court area, but this is just an additional cost, and I'm already in place and already paid and always available. And our system works. Okay, it's an anachronism. It is, but it's an efficient one, and it works in our particular area. If these counties grow and become more populated, okay, I can see where there would be some changes necessary. But at the moment, the system works, and it works well.
Questions from the committee? Representative Richards.
Can you tell me if the county judges in the other counties named in the legislation feel the same as you?
There are two of them here. And I know that Judge Francis Cole from Grant County feels this way. He couldn't be here today. And Dale White, who's the commissioner or the judge of Harney County, I'm quite certain would feel this way. He's in Reno at a public lands county meeting. And let's see, who else? That's it. And yes, I'm sure they all feel this way.
Thank you. Yeah,
right.
Representative Lombard.
Is there a financial reason for retaining the present system, that financial benefit that the counties would lose if it went over to the circuit court system?
No, I think not. In other words,
your probate filing fees and the like presently, of course, are paid into your local county clerk's office.
But with 2,000 people, we really don't have that much fit.
How many of the five of you, I guess there are five, six?
Six, I think.
Six. How many of the six are attorneys?
Are
attorneys at law? How many of the six county
judges? I would suspect none of them. As a matter of fact, in my own county, and I know also in the adjoining county of Gillum County, there's only one lawyer in each county, and he's the DA.
Representative Lombard.
Do you have any idea how the attorneys in your respective counties feel about this proposal? Have they ever expressed themselves one way or the other?
No, not really. Not to me, at least.
Representative Rutherford.
Yes, Mr. Lackey. You indicated that two county judges were here. Were those Grant and Harney County that are represented here?
No, I'm from Wheeler. And Judge Barnett is here from Gillum County, and Judge Holmes here from Sherman County.
And they're all in opposition.
Right.
Mr. Bromka.
I've got two questions. First, are the procedures different in your court than they are in circuit court? Does a practicing attorney have to know two sets of procedures to practice in more than one county? If you have to go to a county court in your county and a circuit court in another county?
I think not. I have I've never had one contested, so I really don't know how that.
Maybe I should have posed that question to the representative of the bar. Maybe you can answer that later. The second question is stems from my own lack of knowledge about the geographical setup in your county. You indicated that if we went from the county court to the circuit court, it would mean going to a different city within your county.
No. We have no resident circuit judge.
Oh, okay.
The circuit judge resides in John Day.
Okay.
But he does hold court in our courthouse.
He still rides circuit, in other words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Further questions from the committee? Representative Rutherford.
What about Mount Hare County? What's their feeling about that?
I don't know. Let's see, who's that?
Roy Harai?
Yeah. He also is in Reno at the public lands meeting. But I would guess that that he would be opposed. And I think most of these men are opposed because it's attrition, diminutization of the county judge authority, and I think it's not a personal thing. I think most of these men feel this system works well.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Lane. Mr. Barnett?
I'm Leo Barnett, Gillum County Judge. And I don't like to sound like a broken record, but I'm in full agreement with Judge Lucky from Wheeler County. This thing, as far as cases pending, we have none. When I seen this bill the first time, it was a week ago, and I studied it over, and I went down and talked to Bill Bennett, the district attorney. And he said, we haven't. He said, what's it all about? And I said, well, it's a bill that's come up. Well, he said, if we had any problems, but he said, the way it is, he says, we have something we bring up. You read it over, you check it over, and sign it, take it into the clerk, and have it recorded that day. For if we had to turn this over to wait for the circuit judge, maybe he'll be here in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whenever. He said, it isn't what we want. He said, this is the way that, or the way we are now is a lot quicker, a lot simpler, and better. And he said, every time I've brought anything up or sent it up, you've always checked it over. And so I think that we're far better off this way. The people are satisfied. We've never had one complaint in any way. After all, like Judge Lucky, we've got him beat by 10 or 12 people. We've got a little over 2,000. But it is working now, and I'm there every day. It's not like I have to wait for a circuit judge. I'm there every day, and Judge Campbell, it's whenever he has to come, and when he comes, it's a 300-mile trip. And somebody has to pay this. And those circuit judges are, we did have two circuit judges in our six county district up there. But now, this last year, you had to put another one on the payroll because they were overloaded with the circuit court cases and their work today. I've been at meetings with all of them. And they're loaded now without having something like this bounced on them. So it's possibly if something like this come on, especially if this comes, and then if juveniles come, what would happen? You'd be putting on another one because they're all worked to death now, and it's all running extra expense to the counties and to the state. So I'm in full support with Judge Lucky that we're far better off, the state's better off, the counties are better off. We know the people. They know us. If they've got any complaints, they know where to find us. All they got to do is come to the courthouse, and we haven't had any complaints on this thing at all, and we don't have any cases pending, and we haven't had. And other judges that happens to handle a probate matter, like the Dalles, they call me, or they send it up, or sometimes they bring it up. I check it over. Everything's all right, because most in a small county like that, you know everybody. You know their problems. You know pretty much their worth and everything. It's just one of those things that, well, I've lived in that county since I was 6 years old, and I'm a little older than that now. And so when you've been working with that, you kind of know what is going on.
Mr. Barnett, how many probate matters do you handle a year, do you know?
Oh, there's probably 2-3 a month on the average.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Rutherford.
Mr. Barnett, did you come all the way here from Dillon County to testify against
this? Yes, I did, and I didn't know about the 10:30 last night. I left the courthouse at afternoon the other day, and I didn't get a call till that afternoon, and when I got home last night late, the sheriff had answered my phone and took the message, so I called Judge Lucky to get more information on myself, and I went to the courthouse at 7 o'clock this morning while the sheriff had left a note on a desk for me. So Judge Lucky and I come down.
How long a trip is that?
Oh gosh, 200 miles. But we really feel that it's what our people want. And as far as you're asking Judge Lucky about the other counties, I have talked to the other county judges about a number of things, and we're all happy. And it sure, maybe it causes a little extra work, because like I told the DA, this is a small part of our work. If the attorneys do their work right, when they bring it in to us and we check it over, why, that's a small part of the job of being a county judge. We just want to be sure it's right, and that's the way we handle it.
Representative Longmire.
How are appeals handled on contested matters than with the county courts?
Well, we haven't had any of that in our county since I've been in office. See, I've only been in 2 years now. I was, a few years ago, county commissioner for 8 years there. And but we haven't had an appeal on any of this since that time. But if anything comes beyond what the district attorney and I could handle, why, Judge Campbell can be called at any time.
In other words, if you had a contested airship case or something like that, or a will contest or something like that, then what would you do? Just bring the circuit judge in?
Try to bring the circuit judge in if it was something I couldn't handle and satisfactorily, which I don't expect nothing like that, because the people know me, they trust me, and I don't think they'll ever have a problem. Can't foresee it at this time, at least.
But you yourself to date have not held any evidentiary hearings?
No, there has been no cause to. Everything is running so smoothly that there's no... There has never been one of them since I've been in. In fact, to my recollection, we haven't had one. I know there wasn't any at the time when I was county commissioner for 8 years, because our county judge at that time was quite an elderly man. And to get to the place where he was senile, about the last 5 years, while I was a senior member of county commissioners, and very near everything that come up, he called me in to talk with me on to get my advice, because he knew he was, you know, he was slipping, and which I hope I never do, but imagine 40 years from now, maybe I will. But that's, but to my knowledge, we've never had one in our county.
Well, would you, in this kind of a situation where you did have a will contest, like, would you attempt to sit down and take evidence on that matter in the formal sense of holding a court hearing, or would you at that point call in the circuit judge?
Well, it depends on how strong a case, how rough it was. If it was really a rough one, I'd call in the, or it was apt to go to a higher court, I'd call Judge Campbell in and get him to handle it, so he'd get his beat in right on the start.
Further questions from the committee?
Mr.
Chairman,
Did you personally talk to the other three judges who couldn't make it here today?
Haven't since this. I have talked to them in the past about a number of things on our county judges. You know, where there's only the seven of us, which there's six of us, has got this. I don't know how come Morrow County isn't in this list here. But they do, like...
They handle the probates the same way?
Yes. And I haven't heard of any big problems. These six counties are the same, but Tomorrow County, I don't know how they are exempt from this here deal, because they have Judge Jones handle juvenile cases and all of those things, but I don't know what to do with this, Buck, and I was talking about this one and where this went to, as far as Tomorrow County is concerned.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
Thank you.
Bob Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, I would first request to allow our county clerk to come and sit and attest as we prepare this testimony together.
That's fine. Could you, both of you, state your names and addresses for the record, who you are?
Mr. Chairman, I do have some written testimony if any of the members would care to have. I have copies.
Fine, we will distribute that. It'll be entered in the record.
I'm sure. Mr. Chairman, honorable committee members, I'm Robert Holmes, Sherman County Judge. I was appointed to this position on December 15, 1975, on the resignation of the preceding county judge. Prior to this, I was serving as county commissioner. In Sherman County, the county judge is considered a one-half-time position. He is the chief executive officer of the county, chairman of the county court, has the probate jurisdiction and juvenile jurisdiction. With me is Carrie Belchy, who is the Sherman County Clerk. She is now serving her second term as clerk after a term as county treasurer and prior service as deputy clerk. She now has a total of 12 years service in the clerk and treasurer's office. Our subject, House Bill 2265, transfers probate jurisdiction to the circuit courts of Gillum, Harney, Malheur, Sherman, and Wheeler County. Probate jurisdiction covers estate probate, guardianships, conservatorships, mental hearings, and adoption. This bill transfers the duties involved to a circuit judge that already has a large district to cover and does not have residence or an office in these counties. He conducts his circuit court trials within the county and is otherwise available by telephone and mail. Most of these probate reviews would, without a doubt, be conducted through the mail. The complete individual probate file will have to be mailed to the circuit judge for his review and signature on the necessary documents at each stage of probate. This will put undue additional workload and responsibility on the county clerks, subject the material to additional exposure such as fire, theft, loss, mutilation, delays, etc., not to mention the additional expense to the county. The circuit courts could avail themselves of the probate commissioner provision of existing law ORS 111.175. By appointing the county clerk as probate commissioner, it would be substantially reduced the amount of time the circuit judge will have to spend on each case, but again, putting some of the prime jurisdiction back to a county level. How may I realize the duties of a county clerk? In most of these counties mentioned in this bill, the clerk probably has one deputy and usually not well trained in a large portion of the clerk's duties. As a result, our clerks must have a complete working knowledge in every aspect of their office, as well as actually do a large part of the work. What happens when you increase their duties? How do you replace these people when they terminate for the wide range of reasons people leave jobs? You can't forever increase their duties. Why do I dwell on the subject of county clerks? Because in essence, passage of this bill will increase the workload and responsibility of both the clerks and the circuit judge. County judges, I am sure, have the foresight to request competent legal advice in matters that their limited legal knowledge would not allow them to make competent judgments of a case. However, it is rare that reference material is not available that thoroughly covers the subject. There is also the provision in the present law that allows the county courts to remand a probate case to the circuit court at any stage of the proceeding. As far as my position as the county judge, the one main objection to this bill is losing the adoption proceedings. I was born and raised at the same location I now live. I know the people in my county. All the same investigative methods are available to the county court that are available to the circuit court. This also seems to go hand in hand with juvenile authority. Some of the same things could be said of the mental hearing aspects which are included in this bill. In conclusion, we fail to see any broad benefits to these counties. Therefore, we highly recommend that this bill be tabled.
Questions from the committee? Representative Lombard.
In your term of office, have you had occasion to hold any mental hearings?
No, I have not.
Further questions from the committee? Mrs. Belshi, do you have any comments to make for the record?
Just on, I was just thinking, Judge Hicks has held probate workshops, and then I do think that they're the excellent workshops, and I don't see how they could not learn from them. We've attended them, and they've been very good.
Do you find in general, the people, are they aware of this possibility of the switch and this obligation? Do you find this?
I don't think they, the people that elected him to office,
yeah.
I don't think so. No.
What's your opinion about what the people feel of the
county? I think they would be rather upset, really.
They like it the way it is.
Well, you know, that's what they elected
yeah.
him to office.
The first place, it's a local guy, somebody
mm-hmm.
they know.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of the way
I really think
feel
they would
it?
Feel that way. And it is quite a, like the other judges have brought up, a circuit judge is not in residence. We would be mailing stuff back and forth like we do all the circuit court files now. And it would be an additional expense because we mail it all certified mail.
Where is your circuit court judge?
He resides in Vidal.
Representative Lombard.
How many probates a year do you handle in Sherman County?
A year, probably. 10, 12.
How about guardianships and conservatorships?
Well, we have 6 open right now.
And how about adoptions?
3 or 4 a year, probably.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you both for coming to testify.
I do have some, she has copied some of her first of the year reports. I might leave with the committee if they feel.
That's fine. They'll be received in the
evidence. Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we might address some questions back to Mr. Pendergrass.
I was just about to invite him back to the witness chair. Mr. Pendergrass, would you like to come forward?
Yeah.
Mr. Pendergrass, do you have any kind of rebuttal you'd like to offer at this time?
I have mixed emotions. I've heard it before. I'm very much in sympathy with the idea that they know the people with whom they are working. I think it's important. It's a pain administratively. Mr. Hicks can talk more about that than I can. All I can do is read, but he writes what I read. It can be bothersome administratively. Seems to me that what we ought to aim at is something that will do both, if we can do both. I'm not at all sure that if the jurisdiction was transferred to the circuit court, which is where it's going to go if it gets tough anyway, and the county judges were appointed commissioners for the circuit court, that you would be in exactly the same position you are now as far as the working with the people is concerned, and still have the administrative sense that seems to me to be desirable. I certainly know what they're talking about when they're talking about dealing with people, and I think the idea is sound. That's the way we started around here. And if it works, I'd like to see it continue to work, but I do see the administrative problems, and as I said, Mr. Hicks knows more about those than I do. And maybe that combination could work.
Are you aware of any complaints from anyone about any cases that have been handled in this area, in any of those counties, by the county judges?
No. There's no reason that I would be.
Okay.
That I know of.
Representative Rutherford, I think, had his hand up first.
Would you anticipate, or did DeMar in proposing this anticipate that the circuit judges would reappoint the county judge as commissioner?
I don't know what the committee had in mind. That would be what I would have in mind, looking at this, yes. I'm not on the committee now. That's why I differentiate between the two.
Which I suppose, assuming that happened, then the next question is, what is the reason to make the change?
So that we have all of the probate jurisdiction in one court, in the court of record, which, to my way of thinking, is where it really belongs.
Okay.
We have it bifurcated now.
If I may ask a couple more questions here. Do you see this bill as impinging upon the juvenile court jurisdiction of the county judge?
When I read it, I didn't, because it says probate. Now, you're asking me to go back in my head and try and look and see what the beginning of that chapter says under probate, and I'm having a hard time. I don't think it should. Does. I don't think it should. For the same reason that of the relationship with people. That's very important in the juvenile area, too.
One other question that was raised was that of the prompt signing of orders. Do you see that as a problem?
I don't. The pro forma orders can be signed by the commissioner under the authority, whatever the authority of the court is. There are going to be some that are going to have to be signed by the court. There is going to be the rare time when you've got to get one signed in a hurry. And the rare time happens when I've got something in Eugene, and we've got to get something signed in a hurry, and I've got to figure out how to do it. But it doesn't happen very often.
Further questions, Representative Wallenbarger?
Are you aware of any complaints from attorneys who generally serve these counties? Probate matters?
No, not specific complaints. Conversation, you know, it takes a long time. Go to any county you want to and you can find it. Sometimes if you look at the numbers, it takes a longer time for more in some counties than others. By and large, that's been helped in the last 3-4 years.
Now, you were talking about being in the circuit court, in the court of record, but am I wrong? Aren't the pleadings and records the same in the county courts?
I have not probated an estate in the county court. So I don't know from practice. I would think your basic statute controls, yes.
So I think
what's the title of the case going to be? I think it's going to be in the county court.
It's going to be in the county court rather than the circuit court, but you're still going to have...
And you're
going to
have different court rules. In any county. So that part is no problem.
Further questions?
What's the administrative problem? You mentioned the only real objection is an administrative problem. What is it?
Well, it's a jurisdictional matter. It seems to me in the structure of this, we're putting all of the probate jurisdiction in the circuit court except, which means that if there is an administrative flow, and Mr. Hicks can talk more about that than I can, it goes differently because it goes to the circuit courts and to the county courts. It means that if you have a hearing on a matter, you have it differently because you may have the county court, and if you don't like it, you go to the circuit court. Well, why don't we get it done right the first time if we have it? Historically, we don't have many. I'm bothered, I suppose, by the look of the chart as much as anything else, but the look of the chart sometimes controls what happens underneath the chart too, and the probate commissioner concept makes more sense to me in this one than does county judges.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Pendergrass. Mr. Hicks, would you like to take the witness stand? State your name for the record.
I'm Lauren Hicks, State Court Administrator, and appear on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Conference. This idea came from our probate committee of the Judicial Conference, and it has been endorsed by the executive committee of the conference, which is made up of several appellate judges and circuit court judges and district court judges. The background of it is mainly that for the last several years, there's been quite a bit of public reaction, particularly in the press, and a lot of it comes from the press, in fact, editorial writers, criticizing the courts for the tremendous amount of time it takes to get probates settled. And I think some of the press is the fact that Oregon is worse than many states in the length of probate. And why do the people have to wait so long to get these estates settled and the money distributed? So the judiciary for the last several years has been putting out quite an effort to request the judges to press the attorneys and their probate departments to move these estates through and not let one linger 1, 2, 3, and 4 years unless there's a very good reason why that estate has to stay that long, and that is true of some of them. For the most part, we found that it takes a circuit judge who is an attorney to deal with the attorneys who are dragging their feet on the cases. And we have quite a few, a few attorneys around the state and in certain areas where even the circuit judges are having a difficult time bringing their probates up to where most of them are completed in 1 or 2 years. Our statistics show that as of 1975, I don't have the 76 figures yet, we're still compiling those, but as of then, the statewide average was about 10% of the probates were over 3 years old. And in the case of Wheeler County, as the judge testified, he's zero, so you can't get any better than that. One of the other counties is only 15%. Which is also very good. Many of our circuit judges haven't brought it down to 15%. Of course, many of the circuits, it's 4 and 5%, 1 or 2%. In one county with probate jurisdiction, however, it's 55%. And another, it's 20%, and another, it's 23%, and another, it's 27%. And we do feel that the probate committee feels that an attorney can deal with another attorney probably better than a probate judge. However, in testifying in favor of this bill, I do want to emphasize that there isn't any big problem with probate judges. They're trying to keep their cases moving along and satisfying the people in their community, and we don't have any thing to the contrary on that point. And we do have probate workshops once or twice a year, and the county judges are invited to participate in those, and we urge them to, and most of them have been to at least one or two of them. And we have mailings to them occasionally from my office, and we wish to keep the good relationship with the county judges as long as they have jurisdiction in legal matters, same as we do the circuit court. So we don't want to in any way set my office as an opposition to the circuit or to the county judges or the circuit judges in those areas to the county judges. As far as I know, all of the circuit judges who are operating in these same counties have good relationships with the county judges and are available to assist the county judge if he has questions of them, especially in the legal area, or how to handle probates or how to organize the probate office. But from the standpoint of the philosophy of it, the probate committee and the executive committee felt that probating estates is primarily a legal matter, and the final authority for it should be in a legally trained judge, and probably in these particular six counties, and there are incidentally only six counties in the state that have probate jurisdiction. They are the six in this bill. Morrow County, the probate jurisdiction is in the circuit court. The juvenile court jurisdiction is in the Morrow County's county judge. But at any rate, that more uniformity in the processing of the estates and more opportunity for legal education, judicial education from our various programs could be absorbed by circuit judges, and the circuit judges would have a better understanding of how to frankly lean on the attorney who is being slow with his probates. And there are there are many of them who are doing that. I don't remember any instance that comes to my office's attention involving a county judge that is a particular case. But we have had them with circuit judges, and I've called the circuit judge, why is this estate 2 and 3 years old? The heirs are writing to the Supreme Court wanting the Supreme Court to do something. And in every case, the judge has said he served papers on this lawyer, and the lawyer promises to bring in his statements or his accountings, but it just goes on month after month, and he doesn't. And of course, some judges are better at arguing that point with attorneys than others, but we feel probably the circuit judges have better weight than the county judge. I think that the commissioner system would work in any county that where the circuit judge and the county officials in that particular county would agree that there could be a commissioner. If you wanted to look at the figures in this book that I think you all have now in the 1975 statistics, it does show the number of estates. I gave you the percentages. The total on file at the end of the year in these six were Sherman County 9. This is the end of 1975, and it probably hasn't changed very much. We'll know in about a month. We'll have the statistics completed. But in Sherman County, there were 9, and in Harney County, there were 33, and in Malheur County, there were 71, and in Gilliam County, there were 4, and Grant County, there were 22. So we're not talking about large numbers of estates, and there, as I say, I don't think there's been many, if any, real problems with any individual estate. It's mainly the philosophy of the thing. I do know from talking to the circuit judges that probably if this bill were passed, they would want something, some kind of a commissioner arrangement in the area to take care of the routine type of ex parte orders. And I know that they feel that there definitely is a need to have somebody on the scene for many of the cases. On the other hand, if we do have problems, I find that I almost have to call the circuit judge in that area to get a reading on what is what's the problem with the lawyers, or you know, from the legal aspects. I need to talk to the circuit judge, and of course they're always feel that they don't want to get involved in it, because after all this is now in the probate judges and they don't want to be accused of interfering. So
further questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. Trahis. We have a request here by one of the committee members. Is Mr. Orrick in the audience?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any comments you'd like to add to this issue?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, Jerry Orrick, Executive Director of Association of Oregon Counties. No, Mr. Chairman, we have, as an association, no position on this bill because it affects too few counties. We simply served as the conduit for notifying them that the bill is being heard.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on 2265? It's in the audience. Representative Lombard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if any of the county judges who have come so far for this hearing, if they would like to respond to any of them.
Is there any response from any
Mr.
of them?
Mr. Chairman, parties? I would like to make one rebuttal.
Okay.
I think more of a clarification at this point. I'm Robert Holmes, a Sherman County judge. Judge Hicks mentioned a couple of things. I'd like to clarify them for the board. I believe the report I brought was the report he's referring to that will be published this next month. We have 4 cases that are over 3 years old. We've discussed that. The county clerk and I have discussed these in the month of December. 3 of them are strictly due to litigation. They cannot be settled till this litigation is taken care of. The other one we are checking on. The other thing, I believe, I'd like to correct Judge Hicks on one point. He mentioned if they want any information on these cases, he has to go through the circuit court to get them. The only place that information is available is our county clerk. If he goes through the circuit court, they're going to come from our county clerk. She has all the files up to date on them. Being a small county, and I'm sure it's the same in the other counties. We have good working relations with our offices in the county. We do talk things over and keep up to date, both from the judge's level and the clerk's level. Thank you.
Any questions, the witness? Further witnesses? Further questions?
Just a comment that I really appreciate you taking the time to come this far to tell us how how you feel about the legislation.
Thank you.
Any further witnesses to testify on House Bill 2265? If not, declare the public meeting closed. We'll entertain motions at this time, recommendations by the subcommittee to the full committee on these bills. Are there any recommendations in the form of a motion on House Bill 2265?
Do we have a poll?
Representative Richards?
I move to table the legislation.
Move to recommend to the full committee.
Yes.
That the full committee table House Bill 2265. All those that are in favor of the motion will signify by saying aye. All those opposed to the motion will signify by saying nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Blumenauer? Representative Bugis?
Aye.
Representative Lombard?
Aye.
Representative Richards?
Aye.
Representative Rutherford?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye. Sword. House Bill 2269.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we recommend to pass.
Representative Lombard has moved that House Bill 2269 be recommended to do pass the full committee. All those in favor of the motion will signify by saying aye. All those opposed will signify by saying nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dugan?
Aye.
Representative Lombard?
Aye.
Representative Richards?
Aye.
Representative Rutherford?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye. So ordered. I won't entertain a motion at this time on House Bill 2113. I think we should hold this over until such time that we hear from Mr. Hicks in the Supreme Court. And I assume that they'll be getting back to our committee by tomorrow afternoon's work session. Is there anything further?
I can advise you right now what the Supreme Court wants to advise
you. Mr. Gillette, would you like to come to the microphone?
While the committee was hearing other bills, I went to see the Chief Justice. What we have here is a failure to communicate. The Chief Justice asked the matter be held in abeyance for at least a week. The Supreme Court will reconsider the matter at conference.
Are there any objections to that from the committee? If not, it's so ordered.
Thank you.
Are there any further matters to come before the committee for adjournment? If not, we stand adjourned.
This is sort of strange. Let's see what has come in.